Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome my good colleague, General Blaine Holt, United States Air Force retired, a veteran of NATO, and that is critical going forward beyond NATO. We begin, however, with the membership right now, 32 member states. No one is more critical than the Baltics. What are those? Three small states between the Soviet threat once upon a time, and retreat to Paris another time. We're going to begin with revelations in Bloomberg newspapers momentarily of the Baltics preparing for the day after they're attacked. What is to be done? Blaine, a very good evening to you. Last week we discussed a make-believe story called If Russia Wins, in which a German national security expert, Carlo Massala, entertained Russia triggering confusion among the enemy. That would be NATO meeting at Article 4 in Brussels and deciding to ask Estonia not to invoke Article 5. Stand down. Now we're going to look at the real Baltics, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, and how they are preparing for that moment when they're attacked or under fear of attack. They're talking about building something like the Maginot Line, a 30-kilometer-deep bunker. You've been to these states. What do they look like? What are their advantages and disadvantages, presuming the Russians are coming? Good evening to you.
Good evening. It's things are moving at a blinding pace in this Cold War 2.0 that I would say, I would dub it. And on the Baltics, which I would say are the very, very front lines, it's the hearts and minds of the citizens of these three countries that are so pivotal right now. What I think you'll find is amongst a very harrowing geography, which you just alluded to, these are countries that have no retreat option. If they're attacked, there's nowhere to go. And so where they're at now is in between a dog and a hard place. They are scared up on the frontier in places like Narva, Estonia, because They look at the geopolitics of the day. They can read a newspaper and they see the consternation between Brussels and Washington. They see what's happened in Ukraine and they wonder, will in fact NATO be there for us if we have to call for an Article 5 action? Will NATO take that action? Is there a political will for that? And on the other side, their fears are reinforced because even back in 2012, 2014, the Russians were very, very active with what we call hybrid warfare or destabilization operations and political operations in each of the three capitals. And so you have the mayors, those that are the government officials all along the border trying to calm the public, but get them to turn their attentions towards basic civil defense preparedness while not spooking them to the point that they might turn against their own government. It's a precarious position, and it's the geopolitics swirling around them that has them in a place of not knowing where to step next or who to trust.
We're looking at three nations working as one to build a buffer zone from Narva, Estonia, on the Gulf of Finland, to the Suwalki Gap, the way the Polish say that is Suwalki Gap. The W becomes an F sound. Now, having walked this ground, what's behind the Suwalki Gap is Poland on one side, and Kaliningrad on the other. Let's complicate this. What if somebody started a war and the enemy was not only in front of you, was behind you? Is this impossible, or Kaliningrad, can it be cut off in some fashion early in the conflict?
Well, NATO would have to consider if there was a kinetic conflict that they could easily discern. And that's my worry, is in a fifth generation warfare environment, you would look at little green men like the Crimea attack of here and there, and before it's too late, the Suvalki gap has been taken over. We understand that that is a center of gravity. We understand the Russian army will apply every effort it can to use the Suvalki gap as a trap for NATO to fall into. So what NATO planners are actively doing is how do we counter that? And while you're focused on that geography, the Russians will have a strong attention towards Narva in this 30-kilometer buffer zone that goes all the way up the Baltics and to the water. That's why it was so critical for Finland to, and Finland came to this on their own, it was critical for them to join the alliance, that any form of naval deterrence was going for NATO had to happen between in the Gulf of Finland, where Finland meets the Baltics. And we have seen some success there on deterrence of Russian aggression, but it's a precarious situation. The numbers and the incentive and the initiative would be with the Russians, because as you and I have talked about, NATO bureaucracy holds this one down. As the wheels grind slowly in Brussels, the need for speed and the need to respond effectively with a predetermined set of rules or rules of engagement for commanders needs to be in hand as soon as possible, with cohesion in the alliance. And those things are quite absent right now.
Kaliningrad is behind Lithuania. In front of Lithuania is Belarus. Is there reason to believe the Kremlin when it says it has pre-positioned nuclear weapons in Belarus?
Oh, that is absolutely what they have done. And here's how I know that. They can't make a vacant threat, not put the missiles there, knowing that we can figure out through intelligence sources whether they're there or not. And at the same time, as a measure of deterrence on the Russian side, they actually put them in places where we can find them and we can know that they're there. And again, that's one of those old Cold War tactics of don't keep everything secret from your enemy. Let them see something so that they know that you mean business and you're serious with what you say you're doing.
The evacuation plans, they can evac the countries, but they can get the old and the young out. But there's not an easy road for them, north, south, east, and west. So we're looking at planning for civilians that can't be planned for, who can't be planned for. We're also looking at the lessons from the Ukraine war. This is Bloomberg reporting from the Baltics. One lesson is stop the momentum in the early hours of the jump off. You'll have some warning, but you have to slow it down. I'm presuming these three states have decided to arm up on them by themselves and not wait for Brussels. Is that something you've heard, Blaine, or is that just speculation?
There are, and they have, but the resources are scant. There's only so much they can do, and they have a real political, a justified political sensitivity towards spooking their public. But here's what those leaders are looking at. They're looking at Ukraine as not just a loss of initiative in the early hours, but a failure to reinforce defensive lines. And then in their status, they have a NATO membership status, so that should be a deterrent. But the fears are growing that as the rancor between Washington and Brussels rises every day now over differences of opinion on how to solve the Ukraine-Russia conflict, Russia is going to see the weakness. And just like the fall of Kabul, Putin will smell the blood in the water and they will make new decisions about what they think is possible. Do they come across that border? I don't think so. I absolutely do not think that they will. However, you have to appreciate the precarious position the Baltics are in to get their population resilient without scaring them into a frenzy and then possibly losing those governments.
Are they building deep sites? Do you know, does anybody know, are they putting in sites that the Russians would have to get down, otherwise they become in their rear guard? What level of construction is going on the last time you were there?
They're doing their best. There is some across NATO and especially on the frontier. There are initiatives, and I've been working with one of them in Poland, to build a sheltering capacity for population protection. Here's the problem. They're way behind time-wise, and they certainly don't have the resources right now that Russia or Europe has largely deindustrialized itself. It has invited mass migration of unchecked means into its borders. Its cultures are falling. Its economies are failing. So the ability to build a cohesive alliance, whether you're doing it through NATO or the EU construct, the ability to get hardened shelters, great defensive positions, there's no time left. We're at the put down your pencils moment. And so I really believe the only possible path to a solution is the one that President Trump is pursuing by diplomatic means, by economic means. And that doesn't mean just stick. It also means carrot. That's how we're going to have to affect the stand down this time and get this on a de-escalatory path.
There's some attention to not frightening the public, but at one point, there's a photograph in the Bloomberg piece of what is known as a 72-hour pack. If you don't get scared when you see this, you're not gonna, we can't spook you. It means, have you got enough to survive for yourself for 72 hours? After that, you're in God's hand. So what we're looking at is a population that's accepted. They've accepted that they're going to be target. They've accepted that they might not get out of this. Is that correct, Blaine?
It is correct because they've watched this over the years. And as I said, in the early days, when, you know, post-Cold War, Russia set about compromising with hybrid warfare, the Baltic political systems, so that they could have friendly governments in place. Well, it's evolved to something much more than that with the war going on in Ukraine and Russia, escalation, weapon ratcheting upward and threats ratcheting upward. So the population understands that they have risks. Their problem is they don't trust their government. They don't trust NATO. They don't trust Washington, and they certainly don't trust Moscow. And so it's more than chaotic, and it's going to get much more complicated as we see financial markets around the world moving against all of these things and the people themselves.
The Baltics were part of the Russian Empire once upon a time. The Soviets made them part of them, their empire. They've been independent and prospering since Gorbachev and the Soviet Union failed. However, it is not my reading that Putin has mentioned them. Have you seen mention that Moscow wants them back? I don't know.
No, actually, it's been quite the opposite. The rhetoric from Putin has been quite helpful here. Over the course of this four-year war, he has been answering neocon claims that, Putin's going to go to the Baltics next. Well, first off, that's an Article 5 NATO line crosser. That's one thing. But he's also made mention of the fact that he has no desire to increase the size of Russia or ambitions about the former Soviet Union. We have reason to believe him here, not based on his ambitions geostrategically, but based on his economic capacities and his own demographic problems at home in Russia. Meanwhile, a prosperous Baltics and Poland and Czech Republic and Slovenia, Slovakia, Romania, even Ukraine could be very helpful to the Russian economy. And that's what President Trump's team is trying to point out to Russia and to the Europeans who have a bloodlust for getting at Moscow.
Blaine Holt, General, United States Air Force, retired. When we come back, after NATO, this is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. Soccer.
Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.